What is going on, my friends? My name is Parker Andreis, DJ of 10 years and host of Behind the Energy podcast. I've been able to meet some pretty awesome people along the way, and we're bringing them on here to go behind the energy, sharing their stories, lessons learned, and shine light on some of their major milestones. If you're into DJing, the event industry, or entrepreneurship, I think you'll dig the show. I really appreciate you being here with me. Now that we've set the table, it's time to jump right in and get started with today's episode. Ladies and gentlemen, party people, listeners abroad, welcome to Behind the Energy Podcast. It's episode 58 with the one and only DJ Gabba in the house right now, baby. What's up?
What's up, man?
to the listeners, I warned Dylan prior to starting. He's a really loud person. And so, like, if there's any peaking or distortion, like, that's on me, so.
I'll just scream randomly at some point.
Dylan, my dude, are you familiar with the structure of the podcast and kind of what we do here with Behind the Energy? We're going to take a majority of the show and talk about your story as an artist, as an entrepreneur. The early kind of like pivotal moments in your career as a turntablist, as a performing artist, a musician, to hopefully provide some insight or even inspiration or golden nuggets for listeners, other entrepreneurs, DJs, anyone who's watching on YouTube, muchas gracias. That will be the first section of the show. For a little context for the listeners, our friendship kicked off not too long ago.
Yeah.
Was that August or September? Nope. July, August.
Yeah, probably August, I think, as I met you the first time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that like DJ City thing was in August, I think. Mm-hmm. So that was the week I moved here.
There's a lot that's happened between that week and where we're at now. It's the day after Christmas. Merry Christmas to all the people that are listening and watching along. Rather than diving into our friendship right now, I would prefer taking it back and having you take it back to the early inspirations in terms of music, or when you got that first turntable, or what that looked like at that time, that age.
Yeah, I mean, like DJing-wise, I didn't really start DJing that much until it was like 5 years ago, probably. I'd always loved like music. Like I tried to play guitar as a kid, played drums, like always wanted to be in bands and stuff. But I don't know, found like hip hop at some point.
Were you listening on your iPod Nano or iPod Touch?
Yeah, I remember getting like I carried a CD player.
Yo.
From the time I was probably 6 or 7. I carried a CD player with me everywhere I went. And then when the first iPod Nano came out, I was lucky enough to get one of those.
Again, I'm going to be interjecting along the way. What's the first CD that comes to mind that you were carrying with you in that foam case?
Of course, it was like, your kid, you're taking what you can get. So it was, now that's what I call music.
Yeah.
It was probably like in the single digits at that point.
I know exactly what you're talking about, dude.
It had, that's awesome. I'm sure it had Backstreet Boys and like all that kind of stuff on it.
That's awesome.
I remember like I had Tribe Called Quest, like Midnight Marauders, and I probably wore that thing out.
Dude.
Like, I still have it somewhere, I think.
That's rad.
That was, once I found hip hop, it was like, I got to be a part of that somehow.
Your head kind of turned. You're like, what's this over here?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
and I was always more into like the older hip hop rather than like the stuff at the time, like was popular as, 50 Cent, all that kind of stuff. All, like, everybody's listening to that, but I was way more interested in like 90s hip hop. And then just wanted to like know all about it, so I actually like went back and learned about like the history of hip-hop as a culture and a music. So, and that's where I like saw DJing, was like, damn, that's cool.
What about the decade prior, and the culture within it, that intrigued you enough to like take that step backwards and do that homework versus like what's popping today, the now 9 or the now 12 or whatever?
Yeah, I don't know, it might just be who I am as a person. I was just more interested in like the old stuff, I guess. Like I think the culture had a big part of it. I was like, I liked punk. I was into like that older punk culture too, especially like New York. It's that era of New York actually is just like really cool in general. The 70s New York, you have like punk and hip hop starting kind of at the same in the same like little melting pot. It's pretty interesting, but
I've got some homework to do.
Yeah,
I at a very high level, I feel like I can see how the influence of like the punk rock pop, you know, made its way over to hip hop, and your decision to, you know, be more interested into like, you know, the early 90s and late 90s, 2000, early 2000s, versus like, you know, what was popping at the time. So you discovered this world of music, hip hop and rap and the nuances and cultures within it. What was kind of the next step in the story?
Yeah, it was like me grasping for anything to like be a part of that. So I started like, I can't draw very well, so graffiti was out. I'm not a great talker, so rapping didn't really fit. And I felt like DJing equipment was just so expensive and not accessible, especially in Montana. Like growing up in Montana made that even harder.
And this is when you were in Missoula, correct?
I grew up
Bozeman.
Like Bozeman area, a really small town of like 1,000 people total. So it just like, I was probably only like one of the only kids interested in that older hip hop stuff. So like there was not a single person that I knew of that DJed in the whole town. If you went to like Bozeman, there were some people that DJed and stuff, but I was never saw that. So I started dancing. I was a B-boy for a long time. And then just always watched. I feel like YouTube came, like when I was able to like get on YouTube and watch DJ, I watched DJ videos constantly, like the DMCs. When Red Bull 3 Style started coming out, I watched that all the time. So like I was constantly just taking in as much like DJing as I could, I was just more interested in like the scratching side of it.
The scratching and the turntablism.
Like, yeah, like scratching, turntablism was, it's just part of hip hop. So that's what I wanted to do. And so, yeah, by the time I was able to like, as I'm a, kind of more of an adult and I have a job, I could buy myself turntables. So that's how like I found a pair of like Stanton turntables, the cheap, I think it was like $200 for both of them.
They did the job, bro.
And yeah, I used them for a long time. I still have them, of course. But I felt like it's like, because I had watched so much of it, as soon as I got them, I was like, okay, this, you know, scratch, you use, do this with the fader to scratch, and this is what your hand, like it just, I feel like I picked up on it fairly quickly just because I've like consumed and watched so many hours of DJing videos.
The concept of like the open and close fader and the push and the pull and the weight, if you're unfamiliar to that, like dude, it's so hard to process, to like understand how to get those sounds or remove those sounds.
Right.
You probably picked it up a lot quicker than I did.
Like the tutorials help too, but really I just watched routines like constantly, like I watched the Trentino three style routine over and over and over again. That one's really dope. Like he won the, I think that was the US finals that he won in 2013. That was the one I watched constantly. But
what about DJ Shifty? Does that ring a bell?
I feel like somebody else had mentioned Shifty to me. Oh, it was Miles. And I didn't know.
I'll have to send you a link after the podcast.
Yeah.
Shifty was like one of the big, you know, turntablist drummers that
for sure
like caught my eye at that time in terms of like inspiration and the culture of,
right,
you know, going beyond the control or taking a step back further, you know, from the current digital age to like turntablism and like scratching and all that stuff. So Dylan, when you were able to start getting this equipment and jumping into it and learning these skills, like, what was the mindset going into it? Was it, this is just pure fun and joy? Was it, I want to be able to share what I'm doing and play sets. I want to do private events.
Right.
What does that look like? Or yeah. did look like at the time?
I don't know. To me, I had always looked up to, like people like Scratch Bastid and Jazzy Jeff. So like I wasn't like interested in battling as much of the stuff I watched. I don't know, when I first got it, it was just more, I think it was more just like to play music, loved music, and just starting to like, I don't know, I'm not like a performative, like performance is cool. I did like always want to be in a band, but kind of like freaked me out sometimes a little bit. So I don't know. I just was doing it because I loved it for sure. Mm. And I loved records, like just still loving music. I was buying records at that point too. And playing records all the time. So yeah, just like from the start, it was more just doing it for the love of DJing and loving the hip hop culture. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know when it started to be like, damn, this is like, I could like decent at this. I could probably play shows. But it's it's probably like just being like when I was in Missoula, I had friends that were, playing shows a lot in bands or like some friends that were rappers, that did some really cool stuff. So I wanted to be a part of that, I think. And so, yeah, I started playing. I didn't have any interest in like doing it for money, like big money, like doing private events, corporate events, mm-hmm. weddings. Like that's I'm not interested in that kind of thing. I would rather do things that are still like fun to like more fun to me, which is like playing to a room full of people that are like. It's like selfish, right? Of like
no
time type of playing where you want to play to room with the people that want to hear what you want to play. I feel like I've heard DJs talk about that being like depending on the type of DJ you're doing, that being like kind of a selfish outlook on DJing of playing like what you want to play. But I don't know. A whole other topic. But.
Yeah, that is a whole other topic. I want to dive into for a second. Yeah. I get what you're saying. I think it's very dependent on the room, the kind of event.
For sure.
What the people are expecting when they come to this particular location. Mm-hmm. And even like the depth of knowledge and the skill set in your toolbox. Like, can you do more of your own art thing?
Right.
Because you understand and you have many options that you can explore. It sounds like you, if I'm understanding right, and Dylan, I think, you know, we've talked about this before, but maybe for some clarity for the listeners, wanting to exercise your creativity as an artist and as a DJ, as a turntablist, as a performer, in a way that is intriguing, fun, lively, interesting for a crowd of people that will appreciate that kind of stuff. And maybe they're not looking for, you know, the top 40 bangers and, you know, stuff you're fist pumping to at 2 a.m. at the club. A little bit of a different kind of route or alley or art, if you will.
Yeah. I view it as like an art form, like DJing as an art form. And again, there's like so many different ways to express that art form. So, you know, like scratching is a way to do that. It's mm-hmm. like a very specific type of art form within DJing. Mm-hmm. Just playing tracks and like keeping a good vibe is a whole other art form that I equally respect and like try to do. And I think I do fairly well. But to me, I like to mix between the two. you know, like now getting away from hip hop and like scratch DJing and going more into dance music, I'm trying to like take some of those things that that art form from hip hop and like bring those with me like into more dancing and like what is usually, it's kind of like, again, maybe being selfish, but like I get bored sometimes. So I feel like that's like that style of DJing, that like more dance house style of DJing. I got like, it's not like the music is boring or the DJ is boring. It was like my own ADHD kind of brain of like, okay, I mixed the song. Now I'm waiting for the other song. So like I just started, like hip hop so much, like it's so much faster. So it's like a way to keep myself entertained playing also, but I feel like it brings in a little bit different dynamic, makes it a little more interesting to me. Maybe it's a little jarring sometimes to other people that are used to like a smooth kind of dance set, but
I think that goes back to the context.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. So,
Well, I'm going to do a quick jump. Now that we've given a little context on, you know, the early days in terms of inspiration, influence, and your lane, I guess, if you will, in DJing, can you take a moment, talk to us about Partygoers and your transition / time here in Utah and those chapters in your life?
For sure. Yeah. The Partygoers thing is really cool. That's a group I'm in. That's Charlie Apple and Trickshot. That's his Aaron Johnson, but we call him Trickshot. So they've been a group for a long time. Just the two of them. I think it started in Portland when they were living together there, a long time, like a while ago. But they asked me to join last year. And it's definitely, it's a like kind of a weird group where it's a live band that playing like house music. And it's really been really cool to be like asked to join that in my kind of role, and that is to like do turntablism type stuff, like use the turntable as an instrument in the band. And so it's definitely like started to open my eyes to dance music more. I have a hard time scratching to slower music right now, like hit to like scratching the hip hop beats that are, you know, 80, 90 beats BPM. I can't have a hard time with right now. It's everything's got to be like 115 or higher for me to scratch to right now, which is kind of funny. But that's what's starting to like push me in a different direction musically in like DJ style wise. And so like we're working on an album, which has been really fun to like collab with them on music and make original music that way. And so
is there a single in the pipeline for quarter one, or like what's something we can look forward to?
There is a single in the next couple weeks even.
Yo.
That'll be really, we're really excited. We have tracks finished. But we have so much more that we're making all like, every week there's like a new track that we're all really stoked on. So, we're going to start releasing singles like at least a couple a month or one a month for the next little bit. And then we have an album that's pretty much ready to go.
Partygoers, all one word. And can they find this on Spotify, Apple Music, SoundCloud, everything?
Yeah. It's all
awesome.
All those spots. We're going to be playing in Salt Lake, the end of January.
Let's go.
At Flinker.
Chase is telling me, you know.
Yeah.
You know, a little preview of, you know, the vision and what's happening.
Yeah, there, that's going to be really cool. Super excited that those guys are going to be able to come out here and Yeah, we all kind of like dispersed. So we're all like, mm-hmm. Charlie lives in Denver now. I live here. Trickshot still in Montana. Mm-hmm. So that's like been kind of different way for us to work too, of all being kind of scattered. Mm-hmm. But it'll be really fun to like have them all come here and play a show. We haven't played a show for like the last 3 months, I don't think. 3 or 4 months since we played together.
Reunite the gang.
Yeah, it's
going to be awesome. Show them the new homeland.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. Like, they get to see the scene a little bit. Yeah, we moved at the same time, basically, like Charlie and I. Mm-hmm. I think they moved to Denver the week after I moved here, so...
Okay, this is going to be a little bit of a stretch, but I'm trying to come full circle and provide more context for listeners.
No.
There's clearly a reason why you came out here to Utah from Montana for college, and then you were back in Montana, correct?
Yeah, right.
And there's clearly a reason why you came back here in Utah, Salt Lake mm-hmm. area. And I feel like I want you to share, you know, kind of that thought process and what that looked like. But also I feel like it challenges your early perspective on turntablism in music, because there was kind of like that ceiling, right?
Right.
And where you want to take your art and your performing mm-hmm. and your DJing.
Yeah.
Am I making sense?
For sure. Okay. Yeah. It's like the reason like I wanted to move back. I just really wanted to move anywhere, to like get out of Montana, because that ceiling that you were talking about was really low in Montana, where there's just not a lot of places to play. You don't have like people in the industry mm-hmm. there really, that are at least like people that are in the industry inaccessible in the way that I feel like they are here. Mm-hmm. So that was like, I just wanted to move. I really liked Salt Lake, like living here before. And I feel like I saw from the outside, like the scene grow to be really cool. Like I always saw
from Montana and being a student here.
Like, you know, from the time I lived here in 2013 to like where it is now, I like kind of kept tabs, because I still have friends here and stuff, and would come back and visit every once in a while, and to see like the city kind of grow in a different way. It feels like different now. It's just more progressive. Maybe it's mm-hmm. kind of always been that way, but it seems like there's new stuff mm-hmm. all the time, it seemed like. And yeah, I just kind of like stalked the scene, I guess, from Montana, you know, before moving. I'm just like, it's like, oh, there's new city movement. That seems really cool what they're doing. And like, you know, like Bangarang, I've seen his name all the time.
Did you ever see him performing?
No, not when I lived here. Okay. Yeah. I think I moved. I moved out back to Montana like right after I turned 21. So I wasn't really out.
Right, when you
do a lot of things
got that,
when I was
that,
here, yeah,
that degree, you're like, peace out, back up to Montana. Okay.
Yeah, I moved here like just to grow, to like kind of be part of a bigger scene, mm-hmm. And like grow. And it's been really cool to like meet people in the industry. It was like kind of strange to me that it's still kind of small. Like if I thought it was going to feel bigger, like a bigger city, but, I feel like it's nice that it is that way though too. I feel like you get to meet people quicker. People are like a lot nicer maybe.
compared to Montana.
No, or just in general,
a much
just
larger city.
Yeah, more just like me thinking like coming to a larger city is going to be harder to get shows. So I'm just going to have to like work super hard.
Bro, you've been doing some dope stuff in a short amount of time.
Yeah,
it's Salt Lake.
It turned out to be a little easier than I thought, which is nice. But like people have just been so welcoming since I got here. and so nice. Yeah, everybody's been from you, like Bang, Chase, like I've just felt everybody's really welcomed me in and like giving me shots to play shows when they didn't even have never even seen me DJ before.
You got the style. You're rocking the turntables.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. It was cool.
I was telling Dylan driving here. I'm like, every DJ friend I've talked to, like, they had nothing but great things to say about Dylan. I'm like, yeah, that's just kind of how it goes with your personality. Between you and Lily, I want to jump into that in just a second. You didn't make the move to Utah by yourself with your partner, now wife, Lily.
Yeah.
One time, shout out Lily if you're listening. Without going into the tunnels and rabbit holes of my mind on just the overarching topic, I wanted to take a moment to talk about your relationship and just the support as creatives and artists. I think that's very unique and very special.
Yeah.
Especially just the time in your lives, our age and goals and whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, anything that comes to mind that you wanted to like add on there or before I start drilling you with some questions or.
I mean, we've been together for 7 years now. It was like a long time. It is pretty, our relationship is pretty unique, I think, in that being young people that have been together for that long, we've changed, changed interests a whole bunch of times. We've changed styles,
phases.
Yeah, as a 20-year-olds, like, you go through a lot of, just changes in your interests or all of that, and we've moved, this was our fourth or fifth time moving together.
Together?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't
that probably makes it a little easier.
It was still stressful, because of such a bigger move, but, I think it's a unique relationship in that we've been able to, stay together and supportive of each other, even though we've changed, what we're doing so many times and been interested in what we're doing, different things. She's been we've been together all the way through running a magazine to going to school to now trying to make this music thing work. And on her side, she's been an artist for a long time and has come in and out of making art. And now has her whole career on social media and is now doing YouTube, her own YouTube channel kind of stuff.
That's exciting.
So yeah, it's cool. It's cool that we have a good being creatives, like you said, we support each other and helping if I can help her with taking photos or something. We have a good back and forth of being able to help each other further our creative interests.
How do I put this? I think the topic of just real deep intimate relationships as a in the performing industry is probably not one that's not talked about too often. And then also just the dynamic of the two of you being creators and supporting each other in your very own, ventures and commitments and careers. I just think that's a beautiful thing. And granted, I've only gotten to know Lily a little bit. It just seems very complimentary and I love it.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to have something like that in my life too. That's part of where I'm coming from this as well. I just think it's very unique and something special that you've got. So
yeah, no, super lucky for sure that we've got along so well for so long.
Well, you haven't forgotten about doing a wheel throwing class or something with you. So some way, shape, or form, we're going to do it. Dylan, I am so sorry we completely jumped over the magazine, which was a huge era in your life in terms of work effort projects and doing dope artistic things. Can you take two, 3 minutes and give us a preview of that?
It was like, I started that like right after I moved back to Montana. It was basically like, it's honestly modeled after Slug magazine here in Salt Lake.
Were they an inspiration?
For sure.
Yes. Okay. Dope.
Yeah, for sure.
Dope.
So it was, it's just like an art and culture music magazine, that I started with my cousin Hannah. We just like kind of had this idea to do some, like, cause there was some cool things happening in Bozeman at that time. Lots of like little house shows and, bands putting on shows kind of wherever they could. So it was like a fun little scene to be in. And, there's of course, like there was really cool artists around. So that's, I just like doing something like that. It always been kind of interested to me. I'd love magazines. And so it's just started like gathering a bunch of references from magazines that I liked. And then like, all right, we're going to do it. So I, yeah, found a place to print that place that we printed, and we ran four issues. They were 32 pages. We sold ads. We did, you know, it was like a legit magazine. It wasn't.
Break that down a little bit for someone who maybe isn't into magazines or doesn't know what that entails. Selling ads is one of them.
Selling ads was huge.
One of the big components.
How you pay for it.
Yeah.
And that's the job that most people don't want. So like, it was mostly volunteers. So like we got volunteers to submit art and to write articles. Mm-hmm. Selling ads was the one thing I was like, I'll give you a cut of the ad sales if you go sell ads. Mm. Nobody wanted to do it. So I did it all, but
you're the one going door to door, having phone calls, meetings, and emails and all that stuff.
It was a lot of work. I definitely like failed out of school because I was doing that. Instead, I was going to business school, which I hated anyway. I just started skipping class to go sell ads. But
I'm sorry, I love that. I truly do.
So, it was like, it was a lot of work, and we've put a lot into it. I had some like people, some great help, for like writing articles, and my cousin did most of the design work and the layout and everything. It was a big endeavor to, we printed 1500 copies
per
issue. Which was, that's a pretty decent distribution for like a small,
that's dope,
magazine. And then we held events too. We threw a music festival at one point, like a 2-day music festival, to kind of promote the magazine. We throw
breeze by that.
We throw shows, everyone like all the time. It was cool. It's like something. It slowly died just of like, I was still trying to go to school, mm-hmm. and other people have, that were trying to help out, have all their projects too, their music projects or school or mm-hmm. whatever. So it just kind of slowly lost steam. And then we decided to move to Missoula, and I was just kind of called it like, we had four good issues. Let's just call it a day.
I get a sense that something of that nature is going to revive or make its way back
I hope so.
The story in the years to come.
Yeah. No, I love like doing all kinds of visual art. In magazines, I've always told people I'd do it again, but I need like three solid people to do it with me, because it was just so hard to do by myself. Like most of that work by myself was tough, but. No, I do. I hope, I feel like that's something, people probably, they just see me do music and don't know, I have a lot of other creative skills and art and that kind of stuff, so.
Swiss Army knife. You got this.
I've done a lot of things, yeah, for sure.
So. In terms of art, producing, yeah. Party goers, and as you're continuing to kind of discover, enjoying yourself in this new kind of dance wave of DJing and turntablism, Dylan, what are you most stoked for about this new year? It's the new year in a couple days.
I know, yeah.
This episode's not going to come out for a minute. This is the last of season three. We got two more episodes.
Nice.
But I think it'll be fun to look back and listen.
Yeah. So
what are you most stoked about?
I got a really cool New Year's Eve show this year, opening for Sunburn. Stoked for that. Get to play like dance music, which will be fun to like break out of kind of being known for as the hip hop turntablist guy. Still want to be known as a turntablist, but break out of the hip hop box, be able to play dance music.
Get some disclosure in there or something.
Yeah, that's
sound kind of funky.
Yeah, so excited for that. I think it's gonna help me kind of get that path that I want to take like started.
Yeah.
Excited for the Party Goers stuff, the album that we have. Like we've been sitting on those tracks for way too long. So, and Charlie does most of the core production. And then kind of sends it off to the rest of us, and we all add our little bits to it. But he's been on it, making some really cool stuff. So I'm stoked, like just for whole Party Goers in general. And then I'm gonna try to make my own music too. So definitely just disco though. I'm like only making disco at the moment.
Hell yeah, that's the lane.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's just what I really am enjoying right now. So that's what I'm doing.
Wow. God, we could continue the podcast and talk about a number of specific topics. Dylan, you brought up another topic that I quickly want to touch on. Mm-hmm. The concept of perfectionism.
Yeah.
And analysis paralysis, I bring that term's brought up on the show two or three times. As an artist who has this vision in mind or who really wants to create and share, but is often like held back by your thoughts or, it not being this particular way, how would you advise someone to kind of get over that? Or how have you been managing the perfectionism or like being okay with sharing what you've done?
Right. Honestly, I still struggle really bad with that. I've been lucky enough to have Lily help me in that. She's just really really smart with that, like social media stuff, of course. So like I've been able to kind of give it away, put that, like have her help me and separate myself from it a little bit, to the like where she'll like, we kind of laid out a schedule and it's like, I need to film this type of video this day, which is like record something with my records one day, like do maybe a routine, scratch routine one day, and just like filter in some like fun photos that we take while we're out just doing stuff. But having it be like, all right, I recorded this, I get like one take, record the video, it is what it is, she's gonna post it, I don't like have,
and then we're locking your phone like, away and then or whatever it is,
right? Like I don't,
yeah,
like I've, if you have that option of like kind of removing yourself from it, like is a, I think a decent way to at least get it started. Because then once you like, once you've been doing it for a minute, then it's, stuff's out there all the time. Then I feel like you become maybe less perfectionist about it or less attached to it. Maybe. I don't know. I'm still figuring that out, but.
So if you find an all-star like Lily in your life, make sure you keep them in your circles.
Yeah, no, for sure. Has helped to like separate from it. don't know. It's tough because even like with making the music, with the even with the Partygoers tracks,
yeah,
I had a hard time like kind of dissociating myself from it because I like listen back to the scratches and I'm like, those are awful. And everybody else that listens to it is like, this is great. Like, this is sounding awesome. Are they ready to go? I'm like, I don't know. I feel like I should retake.
We can those, work on this but together, bro.
Yeah, it's hard.
One mix at a time, one set at a time.
Yeah.
Seriously, I feel you.
No, I've got like putting stuff out. Recording live has helped me where I'll record my set when I'm out live and then maybe I listen to it, but mostly I'll just like, here it is. It's out. It was live. If I messed up, I messed up.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of just how it is. So I think that helps. Getting out of your own head is tough. Tough work. But
One mix at a time. One performance at a time.
Just putting it out. It's not being attached. It's like, honestly, nobody's going to reach out and be like, yo, you messed up that
14 minutes and 32 seconds in, bro. What were you thinking?
Yeah, right. Like, nobody's listening really that hard. If they are, that's cool. And you could use the feedback.
But. Yeah, thank you for taking the time to not only take a listen, but to reach out.
Yeah, and give me some feedback. I'll take the feedback too. So,
yeah. There was a lot of like little golden nuggets in that one, in my opinion. Dylan Wycombe, did I get it right?
Yeah, that's it.
AKA DJ Gabba. Is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with, my dude? Or I mean, we breezed by a lot of stuff.
We did a lot.
In a matter of 40 minutes, but.
I don't know.
One last thought, or
feel pretty good. I mean, I think I'll one last thought that just something I've been thinking a lot for myself is like being good with saying no, especially to like gigs and stuff. Like, that's something I'm doing. That's New Year's. That's looking awesome. Forward to New Year's, like a new year. Like, yeah, kind of saying no to things and being more picky, I guess, about just like picking things that are going to push me down the right path. So
narrow in.
Yeah.
Even further and closer in your own path, in your own lane.
For sure.
There's going to be a part two a year or so from now to talk about how all the ways Gabba said no and how many doors have opened because of that. Because when you say no to something, you're saying yes to something else.
For sure, I
feel that on a spiritual level, bro. I'm working on it too, man.
Yeah.
Where can the people find you on social media, my dude?
Yeah, social, Instagram mostly, at DJ_Gabba. SoundCloud, I got like mixes up on SoundCloud, Mixcloud. My website has everything on there, DJGabba.com.
Rock on.
And yeah, hopefully some things on Spotify soon, like some original music.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Is it going to be Gabba?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, dope.
It'll all be on
G-A-B-B-A.
Be Gabba. Yep. And Partygoers. Don't forget to find that Partygoers stuff.
One word. Partygoers.
Yeah. One
Partygoers.
Word. Yep.
Yeah, again, we breezed through things very quickly, but Dylan, I appreciate you, bro.
Yeah, seriously. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, that's cool.
Most of the listeners here, I think, are local, but it's crazy. We've got listeners in very different places across the globe. If you're a local DJ and you haven't met Dylan, this is me enthusiastically inviting you to shoot him a DM and chop it up over a cup of coffee or a cut sesh. But I'm going to cut it here before I keep rambling. Gabba's in the house, ladies and gentlemen. This has been episode 58 of That's Behind awesome. The Energy Podcast. Yes, I think so. Until next time, next week, hasta la vista. And everything we talked about is in the description, so you can check out Dylan's stuff.
Thank you, man.
Peace. That is a wrap. Thank you for listening and going behind the energy with me. If you loved it, thumbs up it. You can follow me on social media at Parker Andreese and check us all out at bringingtheenergy.com. As for now, we are signing off and I'll catch you next week for another episode. Peace.